have to operate on faith at this point. It is so good to see all of you here this morning. Had such a wonderful time with many of you yesterday, and I do want to just say how much I appreciate that. I appreciate being able to spend a little bit of time with you, get to know you, and I hope that perhaps this afternoon we'll have even more time that we can spend together. And I would encourage you, if you didn't really get a chance to speak with us yesterday, take advantage of the opportunities that we have today, spending time with each other. I'd love to talk to you. I'd love to get to know you better. I really do wish that I could say that I remember all of your names, but since we're getting ready to study about a day of holiness, it doesn't seem fitting to begin with a falsehood. So I'll just have to say that you'll help me out a little bit as we go, and we'll slowly learn each other's names as we head along. Really do want to express our appreciation, our thanksgiving for the opportunity to spend time with you this weekend. Our family is very excited about the opportunity, the possibility of joining ourselves together here with you and doing the Lord's work. I hope that you're excited about it and that this has been a beneficial weekend together. And now, as we have some time to study with each other and open up God's Word, I hope that the things that we say today will be beneficial, encouraging, and can better equip all of us to be more faithful to the Lord, be better equipped to shine as lights in our community. I'd ask that you go ahead and take out your Bibles and be turning to the book of Leviticus. We'll begin reading there together in just a moment. I suspect that you probably have not had the opportunity to read the article that's in your bulletin. Perhaps you'll have a little bit of time to read that later. But just a few words that I've put in there for us to share together. I'll basically state the essence of it is that the culture that we live in, and really the culture of most people who have come before us, just doesn't have a whole lot of use for ideals like holiness. At best, the concept of holiness is treated as an annoyance, something bothersome to sort of be set aside so it doesn't get in the way. And then sort of on the other end of the spectrum, where it gets a little bit worse, holiness is treated with just outright anger, rejection, and even disdain, a lot of hope and hostility. And really that's what we expect from the world. Jesus said it was going to be that way, and that's what we can witness with our own eyes. So that doesn't really surprise us. But what we may not give just an awful lot of thought to are the ways that, if we're not careful at least, God's people can also wind up neglecting holiness in our own lives. And I think that can take a lot of different forms. For some people, neglecting holiness might come in the form of people who simply misunderstand what it is. And they've seen or heard things or people act like holiness is nothing more than some sort of outward sanctimonious attitude, the holier-than-thou types of attitudes people can sometimes have. And they see that, well, if that's holiness, I don't want anything to do with that. So they wind up neglecting it. Well, if we just sort of go on over to the opposite end of the spectrum, well, there are people who think that really is what holiness is. Holiness is just an outward show of ceremonies and gestures. And so the things that they end up practicing are a far cry from what the Bible defines as holiness. Those aren't the only ways in which we can show it neglect. I'm sure that you can think of others fairly easily, but we can probably agree that those within the church and the religious world at large often are not emphasizing holiness in a way that is fitting for people who are professing godliness. And that's a great problem. It's a problem because understanding and practicing holiness is not something that is a negotiable issue for God's people. God isn't going to be okay if we simply remove that characteristic from our lives of service to Him. Holiness and sanctification are what we might think of as foundational principles, and those are principles that God approaches every covenant that He makes with people. And so to try and illustrate our point a little bit further this morning and keep our discussion going, we're going to turn our attention, as we mentioned, to the book of Leviticus. It seems as though when many people give thought to the old law, the way that they dwell on it is from the perspective of, well, the old law was just very restrictive, and the old law was this great burden, and they think about it and say something to the effect of, whew, I'm glad that we don't have to live under something, you know, so burdensome and with so many rules and so many regulations. But when we say those types of things, are we stopping to consider why it is that God would actually give his people a law that had so many specific commands and not just things that were general principles in nature? Well, you might think of passages like Galatians chapter 3 and verse 24, where Paul speaks about the law as being our tutor to lead us to Christ so that we may be justified by faith. And that verse probably brings some different thoughts to mind. You know, we think about the law from the perspective of how it convicts us of our sin and it points us to our need for Christ, his sacrifice. And we think about the law and how it teaches us our need for God's grace and for his mercy and how the law demonstrated that beyond a shadow of a doubt. And we think about how the law prophesied about and pointed to the gospel and the coming of the Messiah. And all of those things are certainly true, and I would say those myself. But when it comes to perhaps the core purpose behind the giving of God's commands, none of those really deal with the fact that there's something being left out. The law was given to teach people the necessity of holiness among anyone who hopes to be in a covenant relationship with God. Throughout the book of Leviticus, as we're going to see in a moment, God continues to repeatedly emphasize that the reason behind every statute that he gave was that he was a holy God, and he required that his people be holy themselves. I want us to consider a few examples, beginning in Leviticus chapter 11. I'm going to pick up reading in verse 43. In Leviticus chapter 11 and verse 43, it says, "Do not render yourselves detestable through any of the swarming things that swarm, and you shall not make yourselves unclean with them so that you become unclean. For I am the Lord your God. Consecrate yourselves, therefore, and be holy, for I am holy. And you shall not make yourselves unclean with any of the swarming things that swarm on the earth. For I am the Lord who brought you up from the land of Egypt to be your God. Thus you shall be holy, for I am holy." Our reading is taken from the context of at least this portion of the law, dealing with different dietary restrictions that are being given to the Israelites. All of the things that were clean, the things that they could eat, the things that they were supposed to avoid, all of that is being dealt with in this chapter. Now, you've probably heard from time to time, people will look at this, and they'll try and find ways in which there's some sort of secret knowledge for healthful eating. So we can look through all the things that God told his people to eat, and that must be the healthiest way to eat. And so maybe we can do that today and be even healthier. And not to sound dismissive, but God doesn't give these commands and say, "Here, O Israel, this is how you can have a trim waistline and lower your cholesterol." None of those things are to be found in there. God gives the core principle behind the reason why you're going to eat this way is because you have to be holy. You're going to eat this way because I'm holy. And as my people, I expect you to be holy. And when you eat in this way, you're going to remind yourselves that you're not like all of the other peoples of the earth who have not been called to be dedicated to me. As we continue to flip through the book, it's not an isolated principle. It's the echo that continues to ring in every chapter. If we turn over to chapter 19, and we begin reading in the first verse, we're going to find very familiar words. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, and say to them, You shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. Well, this chapter goes on to deal with some topics that are, we might say, obviously immoral. The worship of idols and all of the things that would have been involved with that, the immorality, the sacrifice of even children. But there are other subjects in this chapter as well. Chapter 19 is going to talk about issues of social justice. They're going to talk about issues of keeping the Sabbath, even when they should harvest their fruit and how long they should wait to harvest the fruit, how to trim their facial hair. It really runs the gambit of lots of various laws, some of them obviously having to do with morals, but some of them are what we might say are arbitrary. There's nothing inherently moral about them. And so we might look at that and say, well, there's nothing that really ties all of that together. What's the common thread between not sacrificing your child to an idol and telling Israelite men to keep away from the corners of their beards? Well, the chapter begins, or at least this dissertation begins, with the common thread being saying, this is what defines holy and set apart behavior. Everything that I'm about to tell you that God requires of you, these words that come from the Lord are bound together by the call to be holy. And this is what God requires of you. Just another chapter over, in chapter 20, and verse 7, you shall consecrate yourselves, therefore, and be holy, for I am the Lord your God. You shall keep my statutes and practice them. I am the Lord who sanctifies you. Further on down in the chapter, similar words, verse 26, thus you are to be holy to me, for I, the Lord, am holy. I have set you apart from the peoples to be mine. Again, the context of this chapter is largely dealing with sexual immorality. But twice or three times, if we don't separate verses 7 and 8, it emphasizes that the core motivation in carrying out this behavior is that they are serving a holy God, and they have to be holy as well. So what we continue to notice as we read through the book of Leviticus is that it doesn't really matter if the command is big or if the command is small or if it's something that seems to be inherently moral or if it's something that's abstract. The text continues to emphasize that holiness is at the core of God's expectations. Now, I'm not tired of looking at you, but I am going to turn around to make sure I'm at the right place, which is fortuitous because I was not. You know, in the book of Leviticus, the word holy appears in some form over 150 times. So holy, holiness, consecrate, sanctified, sanctifying, some form of that word is in the book over 150 times. Now, when you add all those together, that accounts for 20% of all Old Testament use of those terms. Now, we're not trying to make it sound more impressive just by numbers, but consider this. The book of Genesis, if you just start counting from the events that take place in the garden, that book takes place over about 2,000 years. A little over 50 chapters deals with 2,000 years of history. Okay, that's a lot of time to put into a relatively short space. Well, then we move on to the book of Exodus. Exodus is not quite as long as Genesis, but it covers a period of about 80 years. Right? Certainly not as big as 2,000, but it's still a considerable amount of time. Well, then we get to the book of Leviticus. You probably remember the book of Leviticus takes place over just 1 month. So we've gone from 2,000 years to 80 years to an entire book being devoted to the events that happened in just 1 month of time, and what is the focus of just that 1 month? Well, the focus is holiness. You know, when you're driving along the interstate and you're getting off on one of these exchanges, most of the time they have a little bit of a curve to them, right? And in the curve there might be 4 or 5 of those yellow signs with the black arrow, and it's telling you this is a turn. You need to slow down a little bit. Well, I don't remember what they're called, but I know that in Birmingham and in Atlanta there are some exchanges where they went a little bit overboard with those signs because it's a bit of a meet yourself back kind of curve. And there's not 4 or 5, there's about 100 of those yellow sharp turn signs. They're on both sides of the road. Sometimes they're stacked on top of the other signs. They want to make it abundantly clear you need to slow down. This is a sharp turn ahead. Well, as we're going along in the books of Moses, we've been going at a pretty good pace. 2,000 years, 80 years, boom, right under our belts in 2 books. But then we get to the book of Leviticus, and the narrative slows to an absolute crawl. We have basically come to a complete stop, and God is throwing up all of the signs in the road saying, this is what I want you to pay attention to. I am a holy God, and if you're going to be my people, you have to be holy. We're going to stop right here. We're going to shine a spotlight on the importance of holiness. Every command that I give you is because you are supposed to be holy, and you have to be holy because I'm holy. Every statute about what days you're allowed to work on, how long you're allowed to work, what you're allowed to eat when you take a break and stop working, everything is because you have to be holy as I'm holy. Every careful step that you take, every time that you come before me and you're going to ceremonially wash and cleanse yourself, all of those things are reminders that you are not like the other nations of the world. You've been chosen to live in a separate way so that you can serve a separate God. And so what I need to see as someone who wants to be a part of God's people today is that holiness is a non-negotiable part of serving Him. And it's not limited to the book of Leviticus, and it's not limited to just the law of Moses. Adam and Eve were given their commands and their responsibilities in the garden because they had been separated from the rest of the creation, and so they were supposed to live like it. Abraham was called to live the life of a nomad. He was given the sign of the circumcision because he was called to live a life of separation. When the kings and the captives were going to be rebuked by the prophets, they would be rebuked on the basis that they had failed to discern between the things that were holy and the things that were profane. You'll be turning to the New Testament in 1 Peter chapter 1, because, again, as someone who's serving God today, I need to see that those principles are not limited to any time period during the Old Testament, and they're not limited to the Old Testament. When I read what the New Testament writers preserve for us, the motivation stays the same. In 1 Peter chapter 1, beginning in verse 13, "Therefore prepare your minds for action, keep sober in spirit. Fix your hope completely on the grace to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, do not be conformed to the former lusts, which were yours in your ignorance, but like the Holy One who called you, be holy yourselves also in all your behavior, because it is written, 'You shall be holy, for I am holy.'" And Peter doesn't leave that behind as he's continuing to speak to his brethren who are perhaps tempted, as we're going to see later on today, to give up the fight and put holiness behind them. He says in chapter 2 and verse 4, "And coming to him as to a living stone, which has been rejected by men, but is choice and precious in the sight of God. You also, as living stones, are being built up as a spiritual house for a holy priesthood, to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. Holiness is still the core part of what God has asked me to do today. So I need to make sure that I have a clear understanding of what holiness is. You know, a moment ago, I thought that I was behind, and now I'm so far ahead of myself, I just don't know what to do. But that's okay. We'll backtrack. And you know, if you read those points, that's okay. Just pretend like you didn't, because sometimes all I have going for me is the element of surprise. So let's just keep those points on the down low. We need to have a proper understanding of what holiness is. We can't just leave it out there as something that we just haven't defined. And if we were to ask different people, well, what do you think of holiness? How would you define it? We're going to get a lot of different answers, as we alluded to earlier. I might ask someone, well, what do you think holiness is? And they say, well, holiness is all about attitude. So I need to have a certain type of attitude, or holiness is all about my emotions. And so if there is something that makes me feel holy, well, then that must be holy. Well, another might state that holiness is, again, all about a certain tradition or some sort of outward action, while others seem to believe that holiness is somehow part of this package deal that you get as a perk from being a member of a local church. Now, hopefully you don't know anybody like this, but perhaps you've come across someone who in essence would say, well, yes, I know that I smoke. And yes, I know that I also drink. And when I use words, they're not the best words. Maybe they're curse words. But even though I drink and I smoke and I curse, that's okay, because as a member of the church, I can get forgiveness. Well, that's not holiness, but sometimes people might seem to think that it is. Or someone else might say, well, you know, there's not just a whole lot that I do, but I'm a member of the church, and so just by sort of showing up from time to time, that holiness is, again, part of my membership package deal. And so if I show up, well, then that means that I am practicing holiness. That ought to cover it. Well, you can tell from the way I'm speaking, I don't think that those are good definitions of holiness. So how do I proceed? What do we need to have in our minds when we are emphasizing holiness for ourselves and when we're trying to teach others that a holy God requires a holy people? Well, another definition that we would probably get is that holiness means to be set apart. And that's a good way to think about holiness, because it does mean to be set apart. But the only problem is that that doesn't give us the entirety of the picture. Holiness is not just being set apart. There are things that are in my house that I've set apart, and I don't have a clue where they are. I couldn't find them if I tried. Well, then there are other things that have been set apart, but they've not been set apart for a noble purpose. If you were to go over to our house and you were to walk through the back room and go down into my wood shop, you'd see that there are several pairs of rubber boots, and those are for whoever drew the short straw that day, and they have to go clean up the chicken coop. Those boots have been set apart, but they have not been set apart for a noble purpose by any stretch of the imagination. And yet, maybe you have some other types of shoes. They're not rubber boots. They don't have to be the nicest shoes in the world, but you've sort of set them apart, and those are shoes that you wear when you're going somewhere special. Maybe there's a wedding that needs to be attended, or a funeral, or those are the shoes that you like to wear when you come to worship the Lord. You've set those shoes or those articles of clothing apart, but you've done it for something far more special than just going out and cleaning in the backyard. So separation is more than being simply set apart. It is being set apart for a noble purpose, for God's purposes. In Ephesians chapter 1 and verse 4, He chose us in Him before the foundation of the world that we would be holy and blameless before Him. The other piece of the picture is that we are set apart from things that are profane, things that are common, but then we are set unto the purposes of a holy God. We've been invited to become partakers of the divine nature, to become more like our Creator by imitating His character. And so this is what God requires of us, but He doesn't do it without reason. There are reasons why God requires us to be holy, and perhaps that's another part of the definition I need to keep in mind. There's another phrase that's used throughout the book of Leviticus that serves to drive the people's behavior. To quote one verse in chapter 18 and verse 4, it says, "You are to perform my judgments and keep my statutes to live in accord with them. I am the Lord your God." Now that phrase also appears throughout the book of Leviticus, and it's not paired with the words holiness or consecration or sanctify. But all of those concepts, and perhaps even more, are all implied in the declaration, "I am the Lord your God. I am Yahweh." And that means that He is different from any other supposed or so-called God that might exist, that the other nations might worship. He is separate. He is above everything that we can observe. There are some ways in which God is perhaps doubly separate from us. There's a certain sense in which He is separated from us just because He's the Creator. And as the Creator, He's going to inherently be above anything and everything that has ever been created. As the psalmist writes in Psalm 145 and verse 3, "Great is the Lord and highly to be praised, and His greatness is unsearchable." So there is a sense in which we sometimes call God something that is other. It's unknowable in a sense, because as Creator, He's so far above everything else. But in addition to His inherent position as God, He is also separate from anything that is unclean, anything that is immoral or sinful because of His nature. God is righteous and He is pure in every way, and so He cannot have fellowship with anything that's in darkness. So God is above everything that has been created as Creator, and He's above everything that is sinful because He is inherently holy. Now, which of those categories do I fall into? Well, unfortunately, both. I am separate from God because He is above me, is my Creator. And when I fail to keep His commands, He is above and separated from me by my sinfulness. And so I am removed from Him. So if God desires to have a people for His own possession, He wants them to be set apart, how can He bridge the gap between Himself as a separate and sanctified God and me as someone who is created and often sinful? Well, He calls for a holy people to set themselves apart from the world and to set themselves to the task of learning holiness by following His commands and learning about His nature. The way in which God teaches us holy behavior through the law is sometimes what is called ceremonial holiness. In other words, while there are lots of parts of the law that have to do with morality, things that are obviously a right or a wrong issue, sexual sins, murder, deceit. As we mentioned a moment ago, there are a lot of the commands in the law that are not about issues that we would inherently consider to be right or wrong. We have laws that dealt with mixed material and clothing. don't blend two different types of fabric together to make a garment. There are laws that deal with the ceremonial washings and the diet restrictions. Those types of laws are not giving a moral message in and of themselves. I think that this tie is wool or silk or something, but I think it's unified. But there's nothing inherently moral about this tie because it's all made of one material, and it wouldn't be immoral if it was a silk polyester blend or whatever they put in it. But that doesn't mean that those laws were without meaning or message. All of those laws are intended to saturate the people's minds with the notion of being a people that were set apart, of being a people who were different, to drive home the point of the type of holiness that was required to approach a holy God. For example, in Numbers chapter 8, beginning in verse 5, and it goes throughout the chapter, it speaks about the Levites being separated from the people for service, but then they had to be even more separated after that. After being drawn out from the people, the Levites had to ceremonially cleanse themselves and wash themselves before they could go into the presence of the Lord. Deuteronomy chapter 12 has special teaching on the sanctuary, and it talks about making sure that when you go into the sanctuary, you only bring in what we'll call the appropriate objects for worship. You're not bringing things in with you that are common or unclean or not meant to be there. And those types of laws that drove home the point that when you come before God, it's something special, it's something that requires this set-apart attitude in every way, drove home an object lesson. And those object lessons, with their focus on the type of separation that God requires, were intended to drive the people toward what we might call moral holiness, moral purity. In Leviticus chapter 22 and verse 31, "So you shall keep my commandments and do them. I am the Lord. You shall not profane my holy name, but I will be sanctified among the sons of Israel. I am the Lord who sanctifies you." And so as they followed all of the laws to be ceremonially clean, and they understood more about God's nature and the holiness required to approach Him, they would learn more and practice more of the type of moral purity that we also think of with holiness. And so while we ourselves are not under the law of Moses, we are still meant to learn from it, and the lessons have not changed. We have to practice mindful separation of our behaviors from the world and embrace a lifestyle that's been set apart to God and helps create moral purity. If you turn with me to the book of 1 Corinthians, I have one more passage I'd like for us to read together this morning. Because that point of the continuation of that lesson from the old law to the new is exactly the point that Paul makes here. Now, I said 1 Corinthians, but I meant to say 2 Corinthians. It's not too far of a journey over. But let's read together in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, beginning in verse 16. Well, let's back up to verse 14. "Do not be bound together with unbelievers. For what partnership have righteousness and lawlessness? Or what fellowship has light with darkness? Or what harmony has Christ with Belial? Or what has a believer in common with an unbeliever? Or what agreement has the temple of God with idols? For we are the temple of the living God, just as God said, 'I will dwell in them and walk among them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people.' Therefore, come out from their midst and be separate, says the Lord, and do not touch what is unclean. And I will welcome you, and I will be a father to you, and you shall be sons and daughters to me, says the Lord Almighty. Therefore, having these promises, beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from all defilement of the flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of God. Paul's writing to his brethren here to try to get them to stop joining in all of this immorality with unbelievers. He reminds them, you're supposed to be set apart for holiness so that God can be your God. And the promises that he made to the people in the Old Testament to walk among them if they were holy are still the promises that we have today as God's people. So, chapter 7, verse 1, since the principle and the promise is the same for us, make sure that you are perfecting holiness in the fear of God. God gave his people laws that drove home the lesson of a distinct identity. And by pointing to them, to the careful observation of those laws, it would help them to walk in purity so that they would know more about his nature. Now then, Exodus 19 and verse 5. Now then, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be my own possession among all the peoples. For all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. Now, in our next couple of opportunities to study together today, we're going to continue to explore these thoughts about holy behavior throughout those next two lessons. But what we're going to be thinking about are questions like these as I try and consider whether or not I'm practicing holiness. Do my behaviors and attitude communicate to people who are observing me that I am the possession of a holy God? Or if someone looked at my behavior, do I look like someone who is trying to honor a covenant relationship with the Lord? Or could they tell by my thoughts and actions that I'm emulating God's character in my life through careful observation of his commands? Does my lifestyle promote my dwelling on and then my going out and doing good works that God has prepared for me to do as part of his holy people? In short, am I pursuing and promoting the goals of a holy God? I thoroughly appreciate your attention this morning, and I appreciate it more than you'll know, and I look forward to continuing our study and our time together. I've given you 4 bonus minutes.